You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 226 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to be talking Sensational Wonder Woman number 5, Far Sector number 10, Future State Harley Quinn number 2, Future State Superman and Metropolis number 2, Future State Swamp Thing number 2, Future State The Flash number 2, Future State The Next Batman number 3, Future State Wonder Woman number 2, and Batwoman Season 2 Episode 3, Batgirl Magic. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News, Yara Flor, who debuted as the future Wonder Woman, gets her start in the present day in Wonder Girl by Jor-El Jones. This was originally supposed to release in March and has been moved back to May 18th. I'm really excited about this series after reading the Future State Wonder Woman title. So it's got me excited for this series.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's by far my favorite of all the Future State titles. It's so good. And honestly, I'm okay with the delay if that's giving more time for Jones to do the artwork. Because honestly, it's the same thing with her Catwoman run. She's not a bad writer by any means. I enjoy her writing, but her artwork is really what pushes it over the top. And if we get what we got for Future State in the main series, it's going to be pretty darn good, man.
Yeah.
I am super excited for it.
Me too. All right, next up for DC News, Mr. Miracle returns this May with a new 6-issue series. Mr. Miracle, The Source of Freedom by writer Brandon Easton and artist Fico Asio.
Interesting to specify, too, in this is that it's the version of Mr. Miracle that we've been reading in these Future State Superman titles, which I was pleasantly surprised with, not necessarily because I was a huge fan of the stories that we've gotten with him so far, but just because I'm kind of curious to see them do a story that's his own. I think he might have a chance to stand out more and be a more interesting character with his own story.
Yeah, and I read that the miniseries is going to explore what it means to be a black superhero in a distressful society. So that should be interesting. Up next for DC News, the former Robin, Jason Todd, will be hunting Batman and the Bat Family in the first arc of a new ongoing series debuting this summer called Future State Gotham. So apparently it looks like they want to continue the storyline that's been going through Batman titles with the Magistrate.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily shocked by that because some of the Batman titles haven't felt complete. Or, like, they haven't felt like they've fully resolved that world. So I'm actually kind of curious if this is going to be sort of like a new pseudo Elseworlds title, where instead of calling it Elseworlds, they're just calling it Future State, but that's really what it is.
Do you think we'll get other titles besides Gotham?
I don't know. I think we have to just kind of see where some of these other books wrap up. The slate that we got this week, Drew, I would say, based on those ones, no, because a lot of those seem to just wrap themselves up pretty cleanly. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if they did a Future State Superman one just to have John be older for some stories. So I wouldn't necessarily be shocked by that, but I don't know. I'm not so sure. I think I'd have to wait and see with what we see with the ends of these other books first.
And for our last bit of DC news, the CW renews Arrowverse shows for the 2021-2022 season. These include The Flash for Season 8, Legends of Tomorrow for Season 7, Batwoman for Season 3, and the network also confirmed that it'll be ordering two more episodes of Superman and Lois. I was surprised we got renewal information on most of the shows already before they even started.
I don't know. I mean, that's been kind of CW's MO. I don't think they really want to cancel these shows unless they have to. And honestly, I think at this point, we were pretty early to worried about Legends of Tomorrow early on, but I feel like that show's relatively safe. I feel like it's hit a certain length now that it's just in the CW cog. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to keep going until they don't want to make the show anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you. We've got, what season are we starting on? Season 7, so yeah. Wow, it's been 7 seasons already with that show? That's hard to believe.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
I know. I think at this point, I still don't think it's their most viewed show by any means, but it's been, I feel like it's hit a certain amount of length now that I think CW will just do what they do with their shows and just let it go until the people involved want to be done.
Yep. Of course.
I mean, obviously I could be wrong with that, but that's what they've been doing for like the last couple decades now. They just let shows go.
Yeah. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The 42 cast is turning 100, but like all good things, it must come to an end. Tune in to our epic finale as we see who lives, who dies, and who gets their own spinoff. And then come back when the 42 cast is back for season 2 with even more segments, more guests, and more of explaining why Ryan is wrong. It's why we're still the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. You can only find all this awesome by downloading the 42 cast, a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For you.
All right, Cletus. Before we get into comic books talk this week, I want to talk about two things from last week. First thing I want to talk about was from Future State Aquaman number 1. Because I went back and looked at the issue, and I clearly see what you mean about Andy getting her leg cut off. And I can't believe I couldn't forgot about that, because it's a whole freaking panel, a whole page.
I mean, yeah. But Drew, so now that you went back and looked at that, do you have any further insight that I missed? Because I do not understand why she cuts her leg off. I just don't get it.
I don't get it either, because it did nothing to save her from that creature. I mean, the creature had its tentacles around her waist area.
Yeah, exactly.
So cutting her leg off doesn't do anything.
Okay, I am really glad that you went back and looked at that to confirm that it wasn't just me completely misinterpreting the scene, because when I read it, I was like, what? I mean, I can see a story. Like, don't get me wrong. I think that's a potentially interesting plot development, but it made no sense in the context that they gave it visually. So I doubt that they will make it make sense, to be honest with you. I feel like it's just going to be there just sort of. You just have to accept that her leg is gone now.
Yeah. All right. And for the second thing I wanted to talk about, I also went back and looked at the Batman Black and White story called Duel. And the old guy he meets in the white Batman's Batcave tells him, "Welcome home, son." That's why I thought he was his father. But the story is still, I reread the whole story. It's still very unclear about who that is.
You are definitely right, Drew, in that he says, "Welcome home, son." We just interpreted what that line meant differently. To me, I thought it was implying that it was son and, like, I've cloned you, and this other thing was also a clone.
That was the thing I wanted to bring up, because it didn't say anything about clones in there either. So, I mean, it's very unclear. Those could very well be two clones. And they very well may not.
I do not feel confident in my interpretation of that story. That was just when I read it. I thought it was trying to hint and imply that. Like, you read that story and it's sort of a pseudo horror story by the end. You don't really realize that that's the story that you're reading. And then by the end, I think it turns into a little pseudo horror. And I think that, again, I just interpreted, like, what would be the most, like, fitting conclusion to a weird story like this. Well, then both of these Batmans aren't the real Batman. That was sort of how I interpreted it.
Now, that white Batman's Batcave, you know how Batman's Batcave has the big dinosaur and the coin, the penny and stuff? Well, the other bat, that Batcave had a pterodactyl in it, and it had a coin with the, like, it looked like the Illuminati symbol or something on it. But it was like the opposite of the other Batman's cave. So I just thought that was interesting too. And something tells me we'll never know the real answer to this question.
Yeah, I mean, unless the writer, you know, answers some interview question about it at some point. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Don't get me wrong. I just, like I said, I don't feel confident that my interpretation is right. But until I hear an argument that makes more sense, I don't know. That's what I'm choosing to believe.
All right. Well, let's move on to our first title for this week, Sensational Wonder Woman number 5. Now, the issue opens up on the beach, and the main character of the story is Mindy Mayer, and she's trying to film a commercial. That is until Wonder Woman saves a boy from some sharks. Now, the boy wasn't in any real danger, because apparently these sharks guarded Themyscira for 1,000 years. So they are coming with Wonder Woman like they were an escort.
I know that she says that, but the artwork does not communicate that message.
I have to agree.
She pulls him out. The sharks are jumping after him. They just wanted to tickle him a little bit with their teeth.
I have to agree with you, because the artwork does look like those sharks are after him. Now, Mindy tries to get Wonder Woman's attention because her people have been trying to arrange a meeting with Wonder Woman. Now, an apartment building collapses up the road, and Wonder Woman hurries on her way. Mindy follows Wonder Woman to the collapsed apartment, and we see that Mindy records the incident on her phone as Wonder Woman's rescuing people from the falling building. And as soon as the opportunity presents itself, Mindy crosses the yellow caution tape and runs towards Wonder Woman, trying to get her attention. And of course, a wall almost falls on her, and Wonder Woman must save her. Now, we see Mindy desperately tries to convince Wonder Woman that she needs a publicist and someone to handle her product licensing. And Wonder Woman states that her mother handles all her hate mail. And I thought that was pretty funny. Now, we see the kids are upset because Mindy crossed the yellow tape and is getting all of Wonder Woman's attention. We see that eventually Wonder Woman makes an effort to give the kids hugs before taking off to help at a shooting at City Hall. And we see that Wonder Woman tells Mindy that she'll give this matter some thought. I thought it was interesting they did this issue from the point of view of Mindy, and basically through most of it was through her phone.
I thought that in particular was really interesting, because obviously it was, for like you said, for the most part from her perspective, but then to even that see from her perspective, then to see her phone screen, gave you a better idea of what she's actually paying attention to in the scene. I thought that was a really interesting artistic choice.
I thought so too. And this Wonder Woman digital series, it's been pretty good. And getting something like this, you know, it was a one-issue thing. They may bring Mindy back at some point, and they may not. But I thought it was a pretty interesting issue compared to some other Wonder Woman issues we've seen before.
I thought it was interesting. The only this is a nitpick because I liked this issue. The only thing I thought was a little on the nose is when she gives the business card. She's like, "Look, it's the complete opposite of yours." I'm like, "Yeah, we get it. She's the opposite of Wonder Woman. Good Lord." Have some faith in your writing. Like I was like almost insulted for them. I was like, you're a pretty good writer. You don't need to like, hey, FYI, in case it wasn't abundantly clear, this is the metaphor that we're going for. I was like, come on.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I thought it also made the statement that she was really interested in getting Wonder Woman's business, if you couldn't tell from anything else. You know,
yeah,
going so far
the story definitely didn't communicate that at all before that.
but it goes to show you how far she's willing to go to get Wonder Woman
right,
as her client.
Nothing in her actions would have shown that either from the story. Good point. Excellent point.
I understand, Cletus, it was not necessary.
Again,
but I also found
it. It was a nitpick, but I was just I rolled my eyes when I saw that. I was like, yeah. Yes, I get it. She's the complete opposite of Wonder Woman. Thank you for thinking I'm stupid.
See, I got totally different. I thought it was comedic. So, you know, of course she'd have Wonder Woman's symbol upside down.
Sure.
See, we took it two different ways.
I mean, one of us is right and it's me, but that's fine.
You know, I could just delete your stuff out of there. Oh, man. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Far Sector number 10. The issue opens up with Jo under arrest. She's charged with assault, rioting, theft, and destruction of property. And all she was trying to do was free the trafficked people at the illegal sweatshop enslaving the switch-off addicts. Jo was told that she should have left and notified the CEPD because they would have shut down the operations. Tearing the place apart made Jo the problem. Jo asked to speak to Martha the Sea and ask a favor of Sins. Jo learns that Counselor Marth was the owner of the emotional sweatshop. And we learn that Marth's ancestor was the one who imposed the emotional exploit on billions of people against their will because the city needed to cleanse thousands of years of bad blood. Marth believes that decision at that time was correct. Marth thinks that time has now passed, and we find out that he has other facilities that are funding a revolution. During their talk, Sins comes in and declares that Martha the Sea, by order of the council, is under arrest for trafficking and conspiracy to commit murder. Jo gets a message from Canhas stating the council ordered the shutdown of half the referendum servers, and e-votes aren't being registered. Canhas and her people all can't afford to materialize and vote in person. Now, all the citizens are advised to retreat to designated bombardment shelters as they learn that their own fleet is threatening the city, and Marth realizes that City Enduring has just become a dictatorship and they're now enemies of the state.
We're definitely hitting the end game with this series. I'm interested to see how it wraps up. I'm pretty satisfied with how it's playing out. I'm not going to lie. I like where it's going.
I think this issue just, it started off and then went and fast forward. That's what it felt like to me because we had a lot happen in a short time, but it wasn't too much. It just picked up speed, but it felt like it was the right pace. There wasn't too much going on, I didn't think. And it's definitely building towards the conclusion.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. I do think that it's picked up the pace a little bit, but also in a way that makes sense for the story. You know what I mean? Like, she's stumbling onto something as the action is starting to happen. There's a coup attempt happening, so all of this stuff is going to happen quicker. I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, the way they paced the story, obviously it helped us ease into this new world that we hadn't seen before. But then it also just, like, story-wise, it makes sense because her investigation is quite slow at the beginning. There's not a lot of leads to follow or false leads. And then as she gets closer and closer to what's really going on, you know, everything kind of picks up the pace. So this has been, like I said, this has been a really good series. I'm very hopeful for a second volume of this just because it's been so good. And I like how it's just been able to completely tell its own story. And I look forward to, I'm hoping volume two would be the same way where they just do their own thing. And it's just completely free from, you know, whatever else DC is doing.
Do we know for sure they're getting a volume two or no?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I saw that Joe was going to be coming into the mainstream stuff.
Well, we saw her. She's currently the Green Lantern in the Future State Justice League.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where I remember seeing her before. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know if what she's going to be doing when they do Infinite Frontier, but, you know.
I can't imagine that they're putting her in that and then not using her again. I feel like that's an indication that they intend to keep using that character, as they should. I mean, like I said, I don't know what I don't know how the book is doing sales-wise, but it's been, quality-wise, very good. And I'm sure will fare better as a graphic novel because it's exactly the kind of book that does well as a graphic novel. It's a completely self-contained story.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting if they do bring her into the mainstream Green Lantern, how she'll fare with the other Green Lanterns and what's different. You know, we know her ring's different and stuff, so it'd just be interesting to more about her and what that guardian that gave her that ring, what he or she was up to. So. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Future State, Harley Quinn number 2. Now, the issue opens up with Black Mask confronting Senator Hansen about creating a fraudulent account that funnels Black Mask money straight to the magistrate. Harley states that the best way to catch Black Mask is to find where he is getting his mask, and when Jonathan's men try to invade the warehouse, they are met by one of their own sentries programmed to shoot them. And then Black Mask promises he will take back the city and kill both Harley and Jonathan. Now, Harley plants the idea in his head, and eventually, Jonathan decides to put on the Scarecrow mask to take down the Black Mask. Harley and her bat try to distract Black Mask, and she claims she's escaped and wants to join Black Mask, but Black Mask does not believe her. And Scarecrow attacks Black Mask with his gas, but Black Mask claims that Scarecrow's gas won't work on him. And we see Harley takes out Scarecrow with her bat, and then she takes out Black Mask with her bat, and then we see her escape, which I'm sure was her whole plan in the first place.
Well, it seemed, I thought the implication was that she helps take down, we see her take down multiple former, you know, Batman villains, and then taking down Scarecrow was always part of that plan, is sort of the implication I thought I got, at least.
Yeah, that's what I got from it, too. And by getting him to put on the mask again was his downfall.
I liked this issue. I'm really disappointed that I think this was the last one because it really, this one, I'm confused, Drew, on which ones they decided to do two issues. Some are three, some are four. This one didn't feel like it should have been a two-issue story to me.
I thought it wrapped up fairly well with her escape. So, I mean,
the Scarecrow thing felt too unresolved. I felt like it kind of, I don't know. I think the Scarecrow thing needed another issue to really marinate. Honestly, I also honestly think the Black Mask thing could have worked better with more time. I don't know. I know we disagreed on the quality of the first issue. The artwork in this is really what sells it. I don't know if this art team had done a DC book prior to this, but I really hope they start doing more work for them because this was good. This is really good stuff.
So I was still kind of meh on this issue too, but I thought the story was good overall. So maybe the artwork had something to do with that. So. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Superman of Metropolis number 2. The issue opens up with Jonathan aboard Brain Cell's ship. Brain Cells unleashes 4 clones of Superman from different eras to attack John. John takes Brain Cell's Nerodium core and uses it to defeat the Superman clones. We see that Supergirl wakes up in the Fortress of Solitude, gets the shrinking gun, and goes after Brain Cells. Kara and John make up, and then John returns to Metropolis, to Earth, while Kara works with Brain Cells on fixing the shrinking gun. When Metropolis is restored, John makes a speech to the people telling them that he will be their Superman. This story, I give it the old thumbs down. I didn't really like it that much.
It was bad. This was one that I thought also made no sense to be only a 2-issue story, but I was relieved that it was because it was terrible. Drew, I will admit that I did not read this particularly closely at a certain point, but I don't fully understand how it even resolved itself. Like, I didn't understand the point in which the Brainiac thing suddenly was no longer antagonistic. How did that happen?
I know, and I didn't get why Kara was working on fixing the shrink gun with him and stuff. It's like, all of a sudden, I'm a good guy again. I'm like, what? Didn't make any sense.
Okay, so that wasn't just me. Like I said, I fully admit that I was not reading all that closely at that point. So I was like, what? Did I miss something? And I didn't honestly care to go back and find out. So, this was rough. I don't think this should have been a 2-issue story, but I'm really glad that it was because it was terrible.
Yeah. The other thing I didn't get was John making his speech at the end that he's going to be their Superman. You're already their Superman. it just didn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I felt confused about that because I was remembering the John that we see in the Superman Wonder Woman title, and I was like, wait, you've already been, like, we've seen you actively being a great Superman for Metropolis. And then it sort of occurred to me, you know, like a couple minutes later, I was like, oh, I bet that version is like after the events of this bottling.
Yeah, that could very well be. Well, it has to be, actually, or it wouldn't make sense. Yeah. All right, we also had a Mr. Miracle backup story. It was actually the second part of that story. Mr. Miracle is being chased by robots that want his tech. And while he figures out how to get out of the dome, Mr. Miracle uses the last of his source energy to try and blast a hole in the dome. It doesn't work. And then suddenly Mr. Miracle is just boom-tubed away. I don't know, I thought the Mr. Miracle backup story was worse than the first one. Last issue.
Yeah, this wasn't good. I also can't believe that it didn't seem like it ended. I think there's still supposed to be a third story to this.
Well, I think it's continued in the other Superman title we were reading, where he's on Warworld.
So are we? So that one would have been part 3.
Yes, that's what I'm getting from it.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible design on their part. I think you're probably right. That makes no sense.
We're not getting another Future State Superman of Metropolis. This title's done now, so that has to be where the story continues on from.
Right, yeah, you're right. So, man, wow, that's a poor decision on their part.
Yeah, they didn't even tell us. I don't even think they told us it was continued elsewhere, which is pretty bad.
Yikes. Well, I mean, the third part was honestly probably the best of the 3, I guess.
Yes, the Guardian story.
Chronologically, it came out second. Man, that's that is bad. I am shocked that they did. I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm not shocked. But I'm shocked that nobody spoke up and was like, hey, this is a dumb idea. Why are we publishing it 1, 3, 2, 4? That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. Now, the last story in this, a group of Metropolis citizens band together to help Guardian. Guardian goes after Honest Mary and saves Jimmy Olsen from falling to his death. Guardian gets the girl, and Jimmy Olsen wants pie shakes for everyone. And Superman, John Kent returns. So, that's that.
Yep, that's that. That's that.
All right, moving on to our next title for this week. Future State Swamp Thing number 2. The issue opens up with Swamp Thing and his companions outside the gates of Star Fortress. The man tells them to stop the Makers, and they will need to take the outer wall and gain access to the compound. There are others like the man who are willing to fight to stop the Great Darkness. We learn that it is Woodrue who is behind the Darkness machine. Todd Rice, the hero known as Obsidian, is the one in the machine. And we learn that Woodrue found him in the aftermath of the Great War. We see that Waller Atticus is happy they have a weapon to use against the plants and against the world that tried to kill them. Now, Swamp Thing and his companions attack the outer wall, but Woodrue activates the machine. And when Swamp Thing finally comes face to face with Woodrue, we find out that this has all been revenge because the Green didn't pick Woodrue. We see that Swamp Thing destroys Woodrue, and we learn that the other plant people that Swamp Thing made are aspects of himself. His innocence, his doubt, his ambition. These must die as Swamp Thing transforms himself into this gigantic tree that grows taller than the darkness. And the humans live under its protection until one day a seed can be planted. I got to tell you, Cletus, the story ended way different than I thought. Because I was expecting Swamp Thing and his band of plants and the humans that were working with him, I was expecting them to stop the machine, and that didn't happen. So the ending of the story went totally different than I expected.
This was pretty good. This one was one that I thought actually worked as a two-issue. I certainly would have liked more because it was quite good. But this was good. This was just a good two-issue story.
It was.
I'm hopeful that this is obviously not exactly this story, but a similar style, quality. I would be pretty excited for their upcoming plans for him if it's like this.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting to explore more of this future world, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think we'll see Swamp Thing back in the present.
I agree with you. I'm saying if it's just like, if they do it in this style, this kind of story, I think it could be pretty good. It doesn't have to be this timeline or whatever.
Right. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State, The Flash number 2. The issue opens up at the Flash Museum. Barry is upgrading the villain tech he has and creates a suit to go after Wally. Barry uses the tech to stop Wally and tries to separate the entity from Wally. Barry learns that the creature has been feeding off his hope the whole time. The entity is able to turn Barry into a ghost that can feed off him forever. And then at the end of the issue, we see that Cybeast finds Barry's ring, and it's loaded with data that the Titans can use to find the writers. Oh man, Cletus, this issue was so hard to read.
Drew, I had to reread the... I didn't want to because I hated this, but I had to reread the last few pages because I didn't even fully understand what happened to Barry. And again, part of that was because I wasn't reading super closely, but I was like, wait, what? Oh my God, Drew, this was so...
It was bad. I got to tell you, I didn't totally honestly understand how Barry became a ghost and how the entity was feeding off him or whatever. I wasn't going to go back and read it. I just...
So right at the end, Barry like gives this pointless emotional speech that it's like one of those, like I've learned it's a classic Williamson thing that we saw in his run where like, he learns the moral lesson of the story and speechifies at the villain and then wins. He was essentially doing that, but Famine was basically like, okay. And then resurrected Wally and then like with the Speed Force pushed him like slightly out of the plane of existence so that he was effectively a ghost. I don't know. It didn't totally make sense, but I don't think it needed to make sense because it was stupid. And then right at the end, it's like, and this is tying into Teen Titans. I was like, what the hell? What?
I thought that was weird, too, that it was tying into Titans. I was like, why? That didn't make sense to me either. Obviously, somebody was interested in tying this into the Titans for some reason. Ah, man, this was bad.
It was so bad, and it didn't do any... This wasn't even a full story, Drew. It was... like, if you're going to do a future state thing, I mean, it's one thing, you know, to do a storyline that's maybe risky in terms of whether people will like it or not with what you're doing with the characters, but what was even the point of this story? Honestly, it's not even the fact that Barry loses. That's potentially really interesting. That's an interesting thing you can do with these sort of future state stories is you can have the villain win at the end because you're not worrying about writing an ongoing title and you're not worried about the long-term ramifications of continuity. You know what I mean? So you can have the villain win. But this one was just sort of like the villain won, but what was even the point of the story? It was basically just like, yeah, the villain... I guess the bigger problem was like the villain had won already prior to this story even starting, and it was Barry essentially just realizing that he is never going to succeed.
Right. And it almost made the point of the story Cy-Beast finding the ring.
I agree. It was almost like we read an entire miniseries just to set up a story going on in a different miniseries.
Yeah, this was terrible. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State, The Next Batman, number 3. The next Batman is able to save the couple who murdered their daughter's abductor last issue. The magistrate wants to kill the couple because they were wearing masks. Now, Batman takes them to an abandoned church. And when the next Batman calls the police so the couple can surrender, the husband attacks the next Batman and tries to choke him to death. Now we see Lucius Fox seems to be in favor of the peacekeepers killing masks as Wayne Enterprises supplies them with weapons. Tanya wants to make sure the law allowing the killing of masks stands up in court. And then we see Tiffany Fox does not agree about cops who can shoot on sight and tells her mother that that is not what you taught us. And we see that Tanya states that this is different. Now, we also see that Tiffany confronts Luke, asking him point blank if he's the next Batman, which we now know is not. He's not. It's Tim Jace, or whatever he's going by.
I am so surprised. Again, this is just where I don't understand what determined what got what length of, you know, of the miniseries, because... Well, this was a whole lot of nothing. This issue really probably, if you're telling a miniseries story, so you're not doing a full 6-issue arc, could certainly have been told in, the last two could have been told in one. And this is, so we're getting 4 issues with this.
Yep.
And I thought, I mean, it was fine. Don't get me wrong. It's not bad, but it's a lot of, frankly, treading water. For a series that's not, to our knowledge, really going to go anywhere, I don't think. I mean, maybe this is another one that sticks around. Obviously, we know Red Hood is, but I wonder if they also want to keep doing the having a black Batman, which wouldn't shock me. That's the only thing I can think of is why it's getting more, is because they're wanting to keep this series going. Because otherwise, I don't know why a book like Swamp Thing only got 2 when it had such a fascinating story, and this one is getting 4 and nothing really happened.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not bad, but it's like you said, it's treading water. It's not really moving forward that much.
And I wouldn't really hold it against it. Again, if this was an ongoing book and this was just like, you know, the next issue in whatever, you know, an undetermined amount of issues, it wouldn't really bother me that much because you'd be like, oh, it's just an ongoing. They're just building the world. They're doing all this. But it's a short mini series that, to our knowledge, isn't going to continue on after this. So why are we wasting time world building? Just tell the story.
I don't know. My gut tells me we're going to see this next Batman again in the future, even though we haven't heard anything announced yet.
I agree with you completely. I do.
So it's just, I just hope that when they do bring him back, we're going to get a lot better storytelling.
Well, that's the problem with this approach with him is that this whole magistrate thing is so all encompassing on the Batman books. So, but it's still been like dedicated to kind of building the world of this magistrate run Gotham, and not enough on establishing how did he become Batman. We don't really know a whole lot about him at all as a character. We're three of the four issues in, and I couldn't really tell you much about him. We didn't even realize it was the other Fox brother initially.
Yeah, I mean, we thought it was Luke in the first issue, so, and I barely caught it in the second issue. It was going back over the issue, you know, doing my notes when I caught it. So, yeah.
I just don't think they've done a great job actually focusing on the character that the book is supposed to be about.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to focus on the whole Fox family too much and not enough on the next Batman.
And I agree with that. They're focusing on the Fox family without developing any of that enough for any of it to really mean anything. Like, we don't know, like, why are both parents so anti-mask all of a sudden? Well, let's not get into that. What happened? What's going on with the sister? What's going on with Lucius or Luke? I should say. I don't know. We're not really like we're seeing them and we're seeing these scenes, but it's not really giving us the depth behind all of those things that, yeah, I know is there and I know would be interesting. It's just not doing it. It's just, again, it's just kind of treading water with the plot instead.
Yeah, I mean, the sister that got, it was in the hospital, Tanya. We didn't even see her in this issue, but we don't know what happened to her. We know they hinted that's what's driving Lucius and his wife, but they haven't told us what happened to her. So, you know, it could be driving why the next Batman became the next Batman too. We don't know. We know he is the black sheep, but we don't know why he's the black sheep. You know, there's a lot of unanswered questions of what is driving the different characters in the story that we really need to know. Yeah, so I do see this. It feels like they're building towards a series or a miniseries or something in the future, which I wouldn't mind seeing, but it needs to be fleshed out a lot more. All right, we also had the second part of the backup story to The Signal. And, well, it wasn't Signal, The Outsiders. We learned that Black Lightning's new powers was a long story, but there was magic involved in a curse. I was like, come on, give us something. So we got nothing from that. We found out that the three people that Duke saved, one of them was a spy for the magistrate. And The Signal, Katana, and Black Lightning all worked together to stop him. Honestly, I wasn't really interested in this story, and I pretty much skimmed through it. So,
yeah, I'm in basically the same boat, Drew, and I was really disappointed by that because we talked about this when we reviewed the first part of this story with these characters, that I didn't think the story itself was super interesting, but I was really interested in the like world building that it did, the sort of status quo with these characters, and then it just really didn't ever do anything with them. Like, it had this, what it seemed like it was trying to have this big climactic finish with The Signal, but it never really landed with me. I was like, well, to do what? What's he doing? I don't know. I think we might see this with a lot of the, especially the kind of average to below average stories for Future State, a lot of really unsatisfying conclusions because they're just sort of like, there are two issue versions of those kind of lame, you know, like annual or other books that have like a compilation of short comic stories. And you always inevitably get those two or three that are like, why did you even write this? I feel like we're seeing like the two or three issue versions of those with some of these Future State things where it's just like, what was even like what was the story here? I don't know. I was disappointed because I had, like I said, I didn't necessarily care for the story that much, but I had high hopes for where it could potentially go, and then it didn't really do that.
All right. And then we got the second part to the Arkham Knight story in this. And it's really curious what you thought of it, Cletus.
Dumb? Bad? I don't know.
Okay, because I got to make a confession. I was so done after the Signal. I could not move on to Arkham Knights. I just skipped it. I didn't even skip it. Nothing.
I would be lying if I said I read it closely, but like at one point, Dr. Phosphorus, we saw this in the first story with them that he's clearly dying or struggling to live. What I don't know. It's not totally clear. And the Arkham Knight, she keeps trying to, like, you know, keep him going along, doesn't want him to die. And then he ultimately is shot by one of the peacekeepers, but, like, somehow no, but he's, like, it's been, he basically tells her, like, it's been a good run, like, essentially says, I'm about to die, and then gets shot by the peacemaker. I'm sorry, there's nothing in that, Drew, that he should know that that's about to happen. It's like he just suddenly gains, like, the ability to see into the future, and then gets shot and dies. It was like, okay.
Yeah, I have to apologize. I could, after reading the Signal story, I was just like, I can't keep going on this. It was late, and I was just like, I know I'm usually good at doing the recaps and stuff, but I just couldn't do this one.
The other problem, I have to say that I thought that this story was symptomatic of that I'm a little bit worried a lot of these Batman book ones are going to suffer from, is that we're supposed to believe this is a world where Batman failed, the magistrate took over, he supposedly died, we know he didn't really die, but everybody's been sort of on the lam, you know, getting hunted down, and yet every single story those characters have won. And so it's like, well, if they're winning every time, then how the hell was this ever, like, you can't tell me that this group won so thoroughly that they completely took over and damn near killed Bruce, if not, you know, at least in the eyes of everybody, at least for a while, did kill him. And yet, anytime anybody goes up against them, they ultimately win that conflict? Come on, man. Like, I'm sorry, but this is, again, what we talked about, where we see with that terrible Flash story. In my opinion, some of these guys need to lose. Because otherwise, it's like, I don't believe that the magistrate could have won in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Arkham Knights are a bunch of B and C list Batman villains, and they take out a peacemaker, they steal the bat signal, and they now basically have a bat signal. They essentially just, like, win. It's almost like they're in, like, a different version of the magistrate world, because I don't know how you can reconcile the end of the Arkham Knight story, other than it's terrible and people won't care about it, with the rest of the magistrate world, because that implies that, like, the magistrate's not going to be able to take them out. That they're going to, I don't know, sequester their own portion. Are they just going to rule a portion of Gotham on their own because they clearly can't lose? I don't know. This is if there was any team or story to have the heroes, the good guys, so to speak, lose, this was it. It's a future story. It doesn't matter. You don't need to keep Two-Face alive. Just freaking kill the whole team at the end and be like, ah, we fought bravely, but my dream couldn't last. And then die. Like, there you go. Then we see that the magistrate really is a threat. Instead, a bunch of idiots all band together and steal the bat signal. And this was a threat? This took down Batman? Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. It took down the Bat family so thoroughly that they are their own basically mini nation state, because apparently the U.S. government also doesn't involve itself in a full police state.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Well, no, but again, that's what I'm just saying. Like, you're suggesting that this whole thing took over and won so thoroughly, it's the most complete victory we've ever seen over the Bat family. When have they lost? Drew, what encounter have we seen where they lost? Bat family just keeps winning.
Yep. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Future State Wonder Woman number 2. So the issue begins with Kaiapora telling Yara to stop messing around and hurry up. We see that the three-headed dog is still after Yara. She snaps off the skeleton's hand and throws it to distract the dogs. Yara makes her way into the netherworld, where she comes across Hades himself. Hades is not very happy that Yara is there. Now, Hades' wife, Persephone, persuades Hades to grant Yara's wish and allow her to find the lost soldier's soul. Now, Hades turns over a sand glass, and tells Yara that she has until the last grain falls. And if she should fail her task, Yara's soul belongs to Hades. Now, we see that Kapora guides Yara telepathically, telling her not to fight, but to open her heart to the memory of her friend. And we see that Yara finds her friend, fights to free her, and then leads her towards freedom. Hades is furious that Yara succeeded, so he sends spiders after them. And we see that the women run, almost making it to freedom, when Portera falls into a hole. Yara desperately tries to get her friend out of the ground, but the netherworld is not going to let her go. So Portera tells Yara to let her go, but we see Yara refuses. And then suddenly a group of women are at the exit and kind of pull Yara out of there. And even though Yara is devastated she didn't save her friend, she laughs when Jerry comes up and starts nudging her to pay attention to him. And then the issue just kind of ends there.
Drew, the only complaint I have about this issue is that I'm so upset that this was a 2-issue miniseries and some of these other ones are getting 3 and 4. Come on, man. This is so good. This was so good. I'm not even, like, I thought it wrapped up well. I'm not necessarily saying that it needed another issue, but it was just so good. I didn't want it to end.
It was really good. And I kind of like the fact that Yara, even though she succeeded in getting out of there, she didn't succeed in her goal of saving her friend. And it was kind of it was sad that she didn't achieve her goal, but it was really interesting.
What I really liked that Joel Jones did too with this story is I thought at least as the reader, she helps you understand before Yara does that the soldier probably shouldn't come back. Like, she should have died, if that makes sense. Like, it wasn't the unjust death, so to speak, or mistake that Yara thinks it is. That when you see her death scene, you're like, oh, what? She should probably actually be dead. Like, that seems like a legit death. And then obviously it takes a little bit while longer for Yara to realize that. But I liked what Joelle Jones did there, where she helps the reader see that beforehand. And so then it becomes a watching. You can then kind of watch Yara and kind of wait for Yara to figure it out herself.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that they showed Hades being himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it does make sense that Hades would not want Yara to be there, but his wife, who's basically a prisoner there, convinced him otherwise. So it was really interesting, I thought. And I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the regular series of this, because I think we're going to get a lot of good stories out of it.
I am so hopeful. And based on what we saw in the Superman Wonder Woman book too, it seems like it might be this way. I'm so hopeful that it's going to be really mythology based. And whether that's Greek, or we've also seen kind of South American mythology, that would be so cool. I mean, I would just, that would be such, I think this is a huge strength of the book, is how mythological it feels.
I agree with you. And I really like the mythological stuff. I mean, even when we saw it in the Wonder Woman run, where they were leaning heavily on the mythology stuff, I like that. With when Diana was, I can't remember, there was some magical characters that were kind of helping her and then kind of went off on their own kind of thing. I really like that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping we see that stuff in with Yara's regular series.
Totally agree.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Batwoman.
My name is Mark McCrane. I'm the author of The Best Saturdays of Our Lives.
I'm Dan Klink, co-host of The Best Saturdays of Our Lives podcast.
The Best Saturdays of Our Lives features programming trends from the 1966 television season all the way through the last hurrah of the early digital age of the 1990s.
On the show, if it's animated, we talk about it.
Order your signed copy today at tbsool.com.
And listen to the podcast at esonetwork.com and all podcast platforms.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 2, Episode 3, Batgirl Magic. So the episode opens up with Victor Zsasz killing a husband and his mistress. And I knew it was Zsasz as soon as he started taking off his shirt. Now, the weird thing about this Zsasz is that he seems to a little too happy to be a cold-blooded killer. Felt weird from the Zsasz I knew from the comics. I don't know what you thought about him, Cletus.
I agree it's a different take on him, but I kind of liked it. I liked that he didn't try and do another, like, the same Zsasz that we've seen. Gotham had its kind of version of Zsasz, which was definitely less complete psychopath that we normally see in the comics. A lot more, like, kind of aware, able to be in social situations. I kind of like Zsasz as the sort of, I mean, he's a sociopath, right? But he's like the type of sociopath that's really good at social interaction and manipulating people because he's so charming. I liked that take on him. I thought that was really kind of cool. And also something that makes sense because we haven't always, he's not necessarily always a hitman. I know that he was sort of a bodyguard hitman in Gotham too, but like, if that's the road you want to go with, it kind of makes sense for him to be a good people person, right? Because people want to have to hire him and interact with him. If you're a complete nut, they're not going to want to deal with you. Like, you don't hire the Joker to kill someone.
Oh, definitely not. So, yeah, I have to agree with you. This version is as best fit being an assassin. Because the one from the comics that I know wouldn't be a good assassin. He's just a serial killer in the comics.
Yeah, exactly. He'd just be killing people randomly. He'd just be killing. It would just, yeah. So in that case, I thought it fit well with what they were trying to do with the character. I thought the guy played that character well. For me, he was one of the highlights of the episode, in an episode that, in my opinion, didn't have a ton of highlights. So.
Now, Ryan, who's still working at being Batwoman, wastes a lot of batarangs on a drug dealer. She's almost late to meet her parole officer for her meeting. I gotta tell you, Cletus, anyone else find it strange that Ryan's meeting her parole officer at night?
Yeah. I also, like, I get the point that they're trying to make with the parole officer and, like, how hard it is to do these things. I don't like the way that they're portraying the parole officer in that, like, she seems to be completely unaware that these things would be challenging. Or, like, even at the end of the episode when she's congratulating her on getting a job, she's still like, all right, you need housing by next week, as if that's a reasonable request. And I think the show wants you to think that that's unreasonable. I'm like, it is. And any person worth their salt in that job would also know that.
I agree with you because it feels like she's being too antagonistic.
But I don't think she's meant to be like an actual antagonist. I feel like the show is just making her ludicrously out of touch for the sake of like plot convenience. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be one thing if she was actually antagonistic, but the show clearly isn't making her that. She's not actually supposed to be a bad guy, so to speak. She's just a obstacle, nuisance, but like the kind that's like completely unaware. Like, somehow she has to have been a parole officer for a while and interacts with all these people, and yet couldn't possibly comprehend that it would be difficult to do some of the things that she's asking Ryan to do. Like, come on, come on.
Now we see Batwoman goes to Zsasz's apartment looking for information he stole from Hamilton. Batwoman tries to take on Zsasz with her bow staff, but Zsasz pulls out a bazooka and fires it at her. And Batwoman luckily gets away.
That's all I'm going to say. That's it. That should be enough to express how I felt about that scene.
Because of what Zsasz says about her being a terrible new Batwoman, Ryan decides she wants to make the Batsuit her own and upgrades the wig. And I have to admit, I didn't like the new wig in any of the pictures I saw in the release, but after seeing her wearing it on the show, it's not that bad.
When does she actually make the wig? Did I miss a point where she makes the new costume?
They don't show it. It's off screen.
Okay. I'll wait then. I've got a rant for that.
Okay. Now, we learn that Zsasz is working for Sophia, and she has hired him to assassinate anyone who has contact with the Desert Rose, the magical healing plant that Alice stole and used to cure Mary after her poisoning. Now, we see that Zsasz goes after Mary, but this time Batwoman is able to capture him. We also see that Alice and Sophie wake up on a beach. Sophia has invited Alice to her island paradise, and we learn that Alice was once a student of Sophia. After much back and forth between the two, Sophia offers Kate's necklace as proof that Kate wasn't on the plane but is safe and alive somewhere. Now, Alice and Sophie are dumped in an alley of Gotham still alive. At the end of the episode, we finally see that Luke accepts Ryan for now by offering her a new cool red Batarang.
All right, rant time. So, Zsasz, a professional killer who's very seasoned, and in this episode is confronted with a gun to the face and resolves that situation in seconds, has no answer for how to take out a completely not skilled in combat doctor who is not prepared for the situation. First, okay. Secondly, so they find out that he's attacking her. And not only does she have enough time to get to her before Zsasz kills her inexplicably, I mean, we're talking minutes, Drew. She has enough time, as far as we know, to find out that Zsasz is attacking. She goes down to the Batcave, sews a new costume, sews a new wig, because it is implied through the dialogue that she has not yet redesigned the costume, then gets to Zsasz. Does he sit down and play a game of chess first before he goes out into the alley? Well, I mean, Drew, what the hell? I was like, are you kidding me? You couldn't have had the redesign happen any time before this point? It's unbelievable enough that she would have had enough time to get to her before Zsasz killed her. That in itself would have been a difficult pill for me to swallow. Obviously, it's going to happen because they're not going to kill that character. I get that, but come on. But not only does she have enough time to do that, she has enough time to completely redesign the costume. Ah! Drew!
Yeah, I know. Man. The other thing I thought was strange, why are we keeping Kate alive? Unless they're going to bring her back for a cameo or briefly later in the season. Why did we keep Kate alive? Doesn't make sense to me.
This is just my personal opinion. Why do they want to bring her back? She screwed over the show. It is her choice to leave, and that's fine. She has every right to do that. But they have every right to not cater to her character anymore. If you want to give the middle finger to the show that they are, I don't understand why they're feeling like they need to leave the door open to bring her back. That's the thing that doesn't make sense to me, Drew. She did the sort of thing that can cause a show to get canceled. Those are real people's jobs, not just the actors. Like the people, like the crew, that's their job. That's what they're relying on for their careers. And she just screwed over the whole team. Be like, I don't feel like showing up to work on a consistent basis, so I'm going to be out, even though I agreed to be the lead actor in a series. Just kill her character and be done with it. Again, that is my opinion, and people don't need to agree with that, but that's just my thought on that.
I just thought it was strange that they're keeping her alive, like they want her to come back or bringing her back or something. It's just strange to me.
I agree. And like I said, I don't know why they would want to bring her character back. I also think it creates a problem. Even if you bring her character back for a cameo, it always makes it a little bit weird that Ryan stays Batwoman from that point forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it works better if she stays dead, in my opinion.
I agree with you. So I don't know why they're doing that. I got to tell you, Cletus, after watching Black Lightning last night, man, the writing on the show is terrible.
It's bad. I mean, and can we even talk about how she takes out Zaz? She's losing the fight the whole time, and then essentially just randomly knocks him out with her
baton. Yeah.
I mean, come on. That was it's so bad. I just do not enjoy myself when I'm watching this show. Like, it's one thing to just be like, not really my cup of tea, which is what the first season was most of the time. I feel like this show is aggressively bad sometimes, to the point where I just feel rage.
You feel rage, huh? Me, I just roll my eyes.
It's so frustrating because it doesn't need, like I said, I thought their version of Zaz is really interesting. It's one of the first villains on the show that I would actually like to see again. Maybe the first one that I can think of. Sophia obviously remains to be seen. She's interesting enough. The costume itself, I like. I like the new costume. I think she looks really good in it, and they just found a way to make its debut the dumbest thing they could possibly do. I'm curious, going back to Sophia real quick, I'm curious, she's basically female Ra's al Ghul, and I wonder maybe, like, why not just do Talia? I guess we know Talia already exists because we saw her in Arrow, but, like, why not just, she's, to me, unless you're reinterpreting her character differently than me, Drew, she's female Ra's al Ghul.
Agreed. But the reason why they're using Sophia is because she is a Batwoman character, and I have a feeling if they would have kept Kate on the show, you know, if that actress hadn't left, the story would be a little different, because if you remember, they were lovers in the comic book. So I figured they were going to do something with that. But with Kate gone, then that route's not an option.
That's a good point. So, I'm not opposed to, this episode was an interesting introduction to the character. I'm more interested in her than I am Alice. You make a really good point that she's more important to Batwoman in the comics. It just feels like she's so clearly Ra's al Ghul. I'm not saying, like, obviously you don't do Ra's al Ghul, that's fine. But I'm surprised they didn't do one of the Al Ghul daughters. I almost think it would work. It would just work better, because that's clearly what they want to do. So if that's what you want to do, use one of, you've cast two actresses. I am sure they don't have anything else going on. So.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. So I couldn't help but think of this as I was reading this issue of Future State Wonder Woman. There's a video game that came out last year, 2020, called Hades. It won a ton of Game of the Year awards from different places. It's a really interesting video game where you play as the son of Hades and you're trying to escape hell. It's the type of game where if you lose, you got to start over. But what makes it interesting is that that's sort of the point of the game. Like, that's part of the story. What I like about that is that other games like that frequently, when you play a game that's, if you die, you start all the way over again, it's almost like that run didn't actually happen story-wise. Like, the only run that matters is the run that you win. And that's not the case in Hades. You're going through hell, and like, you're getting help from the different gods like Zeus, and you're looking for your mom, Persephone. But each time you die, that's part of the story. Like, you pop back up in your house and everybody acknowledges that you died. They'll acknowledge, like, specifically who killed you and stuff like that. It's a really good storytelling game. It's also pretty fun, like, gameplay wise as well. If you like Greek mythology, especially if this Wonder Woman story appealed to you, and like the going through hell and encountering like Cerberus and Charon and those characters, I think you'd enjoy the game. It's very good.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the Earth Station 1 episode 561, because they talk about the 80th anniversary of the Justice Society of America, which I found their episode pretty interesting. So if you haven't checked that out yet, I suggest checking that out. All right, if you'd like to leave a comment on anything we've talked about, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we have Sensational Wonder Woman, The Green Lantern Season 2, Rorschach, Future State Dark Detective, Future State Green Lantern, Future State Justice League, Future State Kara Zor-El, Superwoman, Future State Robin Eternal, Future State Superman Wonder Woman, Future State Teen Titans, and then the season premiere of Black Lightning. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.